presentation is probably longer than my presentation. I apologize for that. I just want to clarify that Golden Age Spain is actually a concept that belongs more to the humanities than to the scientific world. Roughly, Golden Age Spain, which is my field where I work on, is supposed to be the best time for Spain, culturally. It corresponds roughly to 16th and 17th century. And if I click one time, it'll go on? Yes. Okay. So, the difference between astrology and astronomy was already obvious in late 16th century Spanish institutions. King Philip II, an avid collector of instruments such as clocks, astrolabes, and globes, founded the Royal Academy of Mathematics in 1584. Astrology showed as one of the four branches of mathematics and was meant to take advantage of data gathered by astronomy in practical applications such as mnemonics, mythoscopic, and dioptrics. The astrologer should master Euclidean and Ptolemaic knowledge, flat and spherical triangles, tables, and astronomical instruments in order to make watches, telescopes, microscopes, and forecast the weather. All data that astronomy had to offer, which is roughly planetary revolutions, sun conjunctions, eclipses, tides, etc., turned into useful knowledge for seamen, clockmakers, captains, and doctors. 10 years later, in 1594, the chair of mathematics and astrology at the University of Salamanca showed a problematic study plan, which is the second one that we have, what we see here. Astronomy would be learned during the second year, after which students were expected to make solar clocks, maps and charts, astrolabes, and develop notions of navigation and military arts. The last year of studies would be devoted to, and I quote, the sphere and judiciary astrology with the corrected Ptolemy's Quadripartitus and Alcabitius, reading the Eclipsibus, the Cometis, the Revolutionibus and Orium Mundi, whatever is allowed from the Nativitatibus and the Decubitu Aerotantium, unquote. These now expurged texts had no place in the Royal Academy of Mathematics. If you compare the two, they are very different. They were directly linked to particular aspects of medicine and prognostication, determining how long the fetus had been in the womb, hence fixing the time of conception. These allowed a better control over the future, since one would not depend on the time of birth, which is not only variable, but harder to accurately measure without proper expertise. This group of texts also contain astrological judgments by births and numerical methods to calculate the length of life. They all had an eye hole to see the future, an extricable part of astrology under the umbrella of medicine. The statutes for the Royal Academy of Mathematics had followed Pope Pius IV's bull from 1564, which condemned artificial methods of foreseeing, including somnispicia, extispicia, which is by the entrails, physiognomy, metoposcopia, which are the lines on the forehead, chiromancy, podomancy, oniromancy, etc. Sixtus V's bull from 1584 is proof that the previous one must not have been overly successful. Now, it banned any procedure used to scrutinize fortuitous actions that depended on man's will, not even for fun, specifically alerting those who paid to know their future. Both documents, both bulls, are the result of a long-standing debate, which was already on when Pico della Mirandola published his 12 books against judiciary astrology. The Salamanca Ratio Studiorum treads in very dangerous waters. All astrological books published in 16th and 17th century Spain made clear that permissible judgments within the Roman Catholic lands had to stem from natural causes, and consequently, prognostications were published related to the three allowed areas, which are agriculture, navigation, and medicine. Note that these are the same licit applications described in Cicero's work on divination 17 centuries earlier. The future was a hot topic and a point of intersection for astrologers, doctors, and theologians in the early modernity. For astrologers, because their job was to reliably project the cycles of the universe. For doctors, because one of the fundamental questions in their practice was for the terms of life. And for theologians, because the duration of the world and the end of time was at the root of Christianity. Once other methods were banned, medicine stood as an alibi to scrutinize the future, sheltering what used to be undisguised divinatory techniques. From the astrological standpoint, there are three groups of texts worth mentioning: annual prognostications, technical treatises, and simplified versions. If we look at annual prognostications in Spain, the number is very, very low. Roughly 10 printed works for the 16th century, only 10, and 32 for the 17th century. And all of them authored by only 6 astrologers altogether, both centuries. Of course, this is not a fixed number, but this is what we have. The standard medical part in this prognostication, annual prognostications, included a list of diseases for that year and the places with the most propensities. So there's nothing really new here. If we review technical astrology books from the same era, we will find equally consistent information. Take, for instance, Bernardo Pérez de Vargas' Factory of the Universe, this book, which includes a precise phlebotomy map which connects the macro and microcosmos, tides, winds, complexion and affection, planets and zodiac signs with humoral theory. In this book, astrology and medicine are one. And natural inclination is not an obstacle for free will. The 10 heavens provide the doctor astrologer, who is one, with data to determine the causes of diseases, the preference for tastes, colors, and scents, as well as geopathy, that is, why certain places pose more health risks than others. Pérez de Vargas claims that any good doctor must be an astrologer to know the cycles of diseases, bloodletting schedules, patients' temperaments, complexion and physiognomy, and the most suitable region for each individual. In his Neoplatonic universe, chance has no place, as all is harmoniously resolved through complex combinatory techniques to obtain measurable tendencies. Even disasters follow a strict order. Conjunctions under Saturn will result in canine hunger. Under Mars, they will result in theft, etc., etc. And comets are assigned a place in practical lists of calamities. In other astrological technical works, man is portrayed as a living barometer that predicts climate change. And so, one would foresee rain by dreaming of water, etc. Most tractates explain how to calculate the exact time for purges, evacuations, baths, and bloodletting, pointed to the dangers of seasonal changes, linked diseases with zodiac signs, and stated critical days by the phases of the moon. They all presented complex computation and also very, very old sources in Ptolemy, Euclid, Hippocrates, Avenzoar, Galen, and Zagod, etc., together with tables showing fixed equivalences. More importantly, they avoided contemporary findings or discussions. Now let's take a brief look at simplified versions. In 1510, a series of repertoires were printed under the signature of Andrés de Lis, an already deceased astrologer. He was already dead. His complex computational diagrams were simplified and enhanced by attractive figures of the seasons, planets, and zodiac signs, for decoration mostly. The medical content was unaltered until in 1594, about 80 years later, an accountant, not an astrologer, an accountant by the name of Jerónimo Cortés, decided to abandon arithmetic to look for profit in astrology. His lunary followed the path of other Renaissance books that promised to facilitate certain tasks such as letter writing, currency conversion, road traveling, etc. Since medicine was one of the three authorized areas, remember, readers taking the moon as basis is lunary. Taking the moon as basis allowed immediate use. The moon is very handy, actually, as readers would not need optical tools, making astrology not only easy, but very entertaining, as shown in the decorations depicted in several editions, such as these. And these are supposed to be, or are technical diagrams, but at some point the decoration takes over the technical aspect. They are pretty, as much as useful. And since medicine was one of three authorized areas, he included standard vascular maps, providing the user with immediate, concrete, and perceptible results. And of course, if you compare these maps with the one I showed before, you can see that it's not as accurate, to be merciful. Some versions of Cortés's lunary included Regimini Sanitatis, tables of bloodletting and prediction of diseases, as well as explanations linking Saturn with melancholy, necromancy, death, and ugliness. Other editions, and this book printed for 300 plus years, it was still very popular in the 19th century. And it's funny because you can compare the editions diachronically and you see that in the 19th century ones, they are covered and sometimes they change their clothes when they're covered into the 19th century fashion. It's really neat. I think it's one of the best sellers in Spanish literature or printing, the history of print. And so some versions included Regimini Sanitatis, tables of bloodletting and predictions of diseases, as well as explanations linking Saturn with melancholy, necromancy, death, and ugliness. Other editions added novelties, such as methods to treat illnesses that could appear and disappear on demand, as well as healing prayers. One edition recovered the sphere of life and death, which, if you remember, in our last workshop, Professor Juste talked about a sphere by which one, through numbers, one could determine whether one would die or live. This is not a sphere anymore. Now it's a table, but it works the same way. If you become sick and you know the exact day, then you count in a certain way through the instructions, and then you find your number, and then if you find the V, that will mean you will lie, you will live. If you find an L, you will die. And if you don't find a number, which is actually only 22, that means it's not sure. But it's a very practical table that comes from the Middle Ages, only it was a sphere back then, now it's a table, it's plain. And so this table could be consulted by the curious reader, as he puts it, and he also entitled, not him, but he was already dead at this edition, but somebody took over and over and over for 300 years, and somebody wrote extraño juicio, strange judgment, just to make sure that this was questionable. So this is strange, it's clearly not strange. It would seem that all of these topics were highly problematic for the church, because the Spanish Inquisition is very bad, no. Because they favored an individual subjected to natural inclinations. But in fact, the lunary was only superficially expurged and printed very well into the 19th century. Early modern intellectuals, such as Juan de Arce, were well aware of the weight of one's natural inclinations, pointing how hard was for free will to tame them. As many men such as thieves and murderers lived miserable lives, impotent against a universe that surpassed their will. They didn't want to be thieves and murderers, but here they are. The great convenience of following one's determination and search for the most appropriate to one's condition had now been replaced by the idea of constant struggle between man and his own nature, one that paradoxically was not always favorable, despite being the product of the same creator. Cortés's editorial success was a reflection of an astromaniac urban society. While the papacy published bulls to deter from judiciary prognostication, there are many testimonies of citizens taking matters into their own hands. If the length of a disease could be reliably calculated, why not apply it to every aspect of courtly life? Eugenio de Salazar reported in 1560 that citizens from Madrid had taken to counting all events in series of three, and I quote, "There are such meticulous people among us who prognosticate like doctors in acute diseases, the fourth day to the seventh, three, the 11th to the 14th, and the 17th to the 21st, from a consultation on a Friday to a Sunday, and from a Sunday to the next consultation, from the king's departure to his return, three, from to the pace of provisions, and they spend their lives hanging from this expectancy. From shabby people, we make astrologers, and we make piles of daily judgments founded on grounds that neither Ptolemy nor Aliamberregel would succeed." Unquote. Some 60 years later, after this quote, Suárez de Figueroa remarks how civil population completely ignores all church documentation that forbids judiciary astrology, and I quote, "Some embrace prognostics as oracles. They are guided by such superstitions that are unable to buy, sell, put on their shoes, or do anything without speculating the astrolabe." Unquote. The talking heads consulted by the patriarchs of antiquity resurfaced as street entertainment. And some students saw themselves as capable of knowing all future events up to the end of the world every time they saw a comet. Meanwhile, otherwise technical terms such as ephemeridae, mundane prognostics, and canicular days made their way into non-astrological works. Amid all possibilities of prognostication disguised as medicine, one that truly caught on was the term of life. A recurring request were concerned by accurateness. They wanted to know exactly when and where one would die. Accounts speak of some patients who asked the doctor which of the spouses would be the first to perish. Individuals would announce and stage their own death, waiting inside the grave, while other texts portrayed an alarmed astrologer trying to stop the apocalypse because, according to his calculations, it was the wrong day. Underlying these funny manifestations is the success of simplified astrological methods, which reflect an obsession for the exact time of death and the end of time, made legitimate by medicine, remember. Physicians were also extremely interested in futuroscopy. Dr. Francisco Valles asserted that life could be eternally prolonged by adjusting the diet, but that was bland, kind of boring to change your diet. Who wants to do that? American Chronicles brought even more exciting possibilities, feeding legends legends such as Ponce de León's search for the Fountain of Youth. Dr. Nicolas Monardes announced the discovery of a panacea in the form of a rejuvenating balm, and more importantly, a tree, this tree, that shows whether one will live or die, through which nature itself indicated the time of death. As stated by Monardes, the branch should be firmly held on the left hand for a long while, after which it would live or die, and so would the person holding it. And this is a later representation of the Tuamatla, which is the tree of life and death. And this is by Juan Eusebio Nierenberg, which has printed this very interesting book on medical plants and remedies and nature. And it has not only this, but other very curious plants with strange applications. I recommend it. It's very interesting. The physician who took the most interest in the futuroscopic possibilities of medicine was Dr. Juan Huarte, whose work on human inclinations was partially expurged, but leaving the parts on medical prognostication intact. Note that. Huarte was captivated by what the alienated mind could do and studied why brain disease provided stupid people with instant knowledge and foreseeing capabilities. He has stories on somebody who was very stupid and all of a sudden he could speak languages and dead languages and old languages and play music and even read the stars and have astrological knowledge just like that instantly. On demand. His book, Huarte's book, abandons the Ptolemaic tradition and places itself on the purely medical, exploiting the genuine etymology of divination, one of the oldest futuroscopic methods. Divination involves drying the brain to infuse oneself with knowledge. Huarte's approach was strictly physiological, medical, and secularized. He did not propose, as some medieval demonological texts did, to dry anyone's gray matter, but observed how dying and frenetics spontaneously access the world of ideas without having studied. Once the rational soul had untangled from the body, the sick mind acquired the privilege to glimpse into the future. So, madmen, those about to die, right there in between, and resurrected individuals become different versions of retracted minds. They have all lost conventional language, which is tied to the worldly, and approach the divine in the same way necromancers did, only this time through natural means. Again, Huarte never induced insanity or dried anybody's brain, as that would have been illicit, but did recognize this as a potential tool, asserting that, and I quote, "There are signs in natural things to know what is to come, and I affirm that there are indicators to read." distinguish the past, the present, and to conjecture what is to come, unquote. This verb, conjecture, is not chosen at random. Cicero's On Divination defined it as, and I quote, an art on the part of those who, having learned old things by observation, seek new things by conjecture, unquote. If nature is the one to complete the time by showing the future as part of its own cycle, then the process of looking into it becomes perfectly legitimate. The separation between body and brain is also a fundamental part in the work of Dr. Alonso de Freilas, who wonders, quote, whether melancholics are capable of knowing what is to come or guess good or bad future events through the strength of their mind or by dreaming, unquote. Dr. Freilas, too, considers the melancholic and dreaming mind as a natural tool. Oniromancy, a specifically banned method, comes into play in a desacralized fashion. The ancient incubic method is removed from its holy grounds and becomes authorized for medical purposes because it reflects humoral imbalances, thus allowing for effective medical prognosis. Nightmares will result into short narrative pieces such as these, and I quote, abundance of cholera will result in dreams about war. Excess of blood will produce radiance and colors. Whoever is thirsty will see oneself drinking. Melancholics will dream of sepulchres, corpses, and being run over by a bull. Phlegmatics will swim through seas and rivers, and gas inside the body will result into falling from towers and never landing because they are in their bed, unquote. Dr. Santa de Oropesa also relied on oniromancy, which produced, according to his words, strange prognoses. Writing about someone who dreamed of eating, after which he would have a kidney stone. If he was eating something hard, in the dream, of course, he would have acute pain, and vice versa. If he was eating something soft, he would have only mild pain. And one day the patient dreamed of eating tin, metal, after which he suffered cruel and extended pain. According to García Ballester, quote, prognosis is one of the essential problems and most important objectives of Galenic diagnosis. Galen was concerned to distinguish it from divination or prophecy, both to improve diagnosis technically and to enhance the physician's reputation, unquote. Galen's material shows timing as a tool for tracing the development of a disease, and so futuroscopy kept thriving despite the many prohibitions because its medical portion allowed prognostication under natural methods as an authorized target. The doctors we've seen so far were very interested in natural tools to peek into the future. However, they no longer glance at the stars. Let's look for a moment at the institutional standpoint. The chair of prognosis in Spanish universities was already under the Faculty of Medicine, not astrology. These were already two separate careers. But the distribution of knowledge was problematic because although medical texts had only residual astrological material, astrology books still held a substantial portion of medical science. It was common for academics to hold joint chairs, to practice medicine under the chair of astrology, or to write prognostics under a medical license. Mathematician Diego Pérez de Mesa wrote on the uncertitude of astrological judgment, while Francisco Fernández doctor to Philip II, the king, published a book on comets and prodigies in 1578. Despite this versatility, it is also clear that professors would research only in one of the two sciences so as to concentrate their efforts. Also a good indicator of the excision are portraits of doctors. We have a little gallery here. And they are shown with their textbooks, their coats of arms, and their dissection tools instead of astrolabes and compasses. And we see the top three ones, the first two ones have their books in their hand. The third one has the coat of arms as well. And these two are a bit more unusual. This one is older, an older doctor. He's pointing to the skull saying, "This is where we're going." This one is also unusual because he has the Advocation of the Virgin Mary, which is not normal for physicians to do. And this one is very notorious. It's a very famous image of Porcelis, a doctor who was a specialist on dissecting, and he was very proud of his kidney and his dissective skills. And it's probably the most reproduced. We don't have many images. This is as much as I could find. The frictions between doctors and astrologers were already evident in Miguel Servet's time. He held both degrees, but published his Dissertatio pro Astrologia in 1538 to refute the physicians who attacked astrological methods of prognosis. Astrologers insisted that doctors ought to learn the science and made a formal petition to the courts in 1563 and 1570. The petition went to the universities and was rejected, and astrology remained a small portion of the BA and not a requirement for medical studies. It was a failed attempt to reestablish the ancient figure of the astrologer doctor, which was not welcomed by medical faculties at this point. One crucial change took place in 1582, very crucial. The reform of the calendar undertaken by Gregory the 13th, which eliminated 10 days in October. Just like that. Spain accepted the change and began adjusting letters, provisions, contracts, and judiciary acts. Rents and debts were prorated, and October salaries lower. Saint Teresa of Jesus had died October the 5th, a day that no longer existed, and so the commemoration also had to be moved. This papal bull also impacted almanacs, chronographies, chronologies, and ephemeridae, and a number of these works had to be re-edited, much to the satisfaction of printers. The content of these books did not change much and was only adjusted to save the 10-day gap, but the repercussion was greater than a simple change of dates. It meant that the reason of time had been wrong up to that day, that the world had been living 10 days in the past, that the estimated dates for the Genesis, the creation of Adam, liturgical feasts, and the age of the world, and the eras, and the kingdoms were off. Even worse, so were future projections for the end of the Islamic Empire, the collapse of Muslim religion, and the extinction of time, apocalypse. From the astrological standpoint, this was a necessary and accurate change, but it did not help the reputation of astrology. In non-scientific perception, and please note, these are non-scientific images, and I must be very careful with that because it's easy for me to confuse between astrological parodies and satires and non-astrological, non-scientific ones, artistic ones. These are artistic, non-scientific perceptions. In non-scientific perception, the astrologer had been stigmatized for years, traveling alone as parody or satire and depicting schools and following Icarus, Endurus, and Altiato's artwork. For physicians, the presence of astrology was intrusive after the reform of the calendar. For a science that claimed to be exact, a 10-day gap was a long time when applied to calculating purchase, bloodletting, baths, the time of conception, the zodiac sign, especially for the ones born under Libra, which is in October, planetary influences on character, and among all, the exact time of death. Prestigious doctors such as Francisco Valles had purposely avoided astrology in his practice because it was inconsistent and disregarding of bodily observation. After the reform of the calendar, he complains how astrologers keep inventing new planets and constantly throwing hypotheses which could only speak for incertitude. For doctors, the harm was of a different kind because certain methods were disseminated under the seal of medicine. The time of death was now presented as a game, and gallant cycles of acute illnesses could be looked up in tables without any medical expertise, reinforced by healing prayers. While doctors had neglected astrological studies, the simplification of astrology combined with curiosity had resulted in an astromania that acquired false scientific overtones and ended up affecting therapy. Medical works were relatively free of popularization until the 18th century, more or less. But astrological works went ahead in providing the reader with medical information that seemed immediate, easy, and safe. Many doctors were not satisfied with what was ecclesiastically approved as natural, which they saw as a degraded knowledge, detrimental to their practice and encouraging of professional intrusion. They dismissed both simplified lunaries and extensive technical complex tractates as prejudicial for medical practice in so many ways. Long gone were the days when Dr. Jerónimo Torrella recommended applying gold figures to the body at dawn, dusk, and full moon to cure certain illnesses. What was a reminiscence of old Roman and Arabic practices was no longer accepted as a standard in the 16th century, and very, very few physicians accepted astrology as a therapeutic tool at this point. One after the other, doctors rejected all astrological methods dealing with prognosis on the grounds of unreliability. Take, for instance, the influence of heavenly bodies in place, on which Dr. Juan Jimenez expresses his doubts, and I quote, although it might be, it does not add up. It does not seem to be caused by constellations or the effect of eclipses, as astrologers say, unquote. Dr. Andosilla opts for a practical disinterest that spares him the effort, and I quote, planets refer to the heavens and God's will, so let's leave the dispute to the theologians. Early modern Spanish medical books on plague seldom refer to the planets and comets and as causes of infection, which are rather attributed to direct contact. The influence of the moon, so extended in folkloric and non-scientific works, is also absent. Diego de Aroza, the doctor who worked most extensively on diseases from a historical perspective, comes to the following very eloquent conclusion, and I quote, the two great remedies, bloodletting and purge, these two evacuations, when necessary, must be done without the moon knowing, because she, the moon, is very discreet and lives so far away that doesn't mind not to be told. Because the good or bad outcome depends on many causes unrelated to the moon and the sun. The important thing The medical consensus on lunatics and those affected by choral gout is that they have a cerebral decompensation and excess of black bile. Even if the ultimate cause is birth between two moons, the moisture given off by the planets plays no part in the occurrence of the disease, which cannot be predicted by its phases. Also, the term morbid lunacy is discarded from medical sources, and planetary influences at this point residual. Despite Pérez de Vargas' complaints, the astrologer, doctor, medical practice no longer shows traces of astrological methods. Doctors turn to Neoplatonism to prove that it is impossible for a beautiful cosmos to produce such cruel plagues, despite what Galen and Avicenna say. Bloodletting was a particularly sensitive subject. Theologians now consider superstitious to bleed patients after an astrological table. Doctors no longer ask patients for their birthday or consult the quadrants, houses, and scopes before a phlebotomy. One physician, Dr. Alejo de Abreu, routinely drew his own blood every time he felt strong enough. And in fact, bloodletting became so fashionable that it turned into a feast. Noble patients gave gifts to each other to mark the beginning of the procedure, which could last several months. Phlebotomy became a nice way of living, since veins, fountains, as they were called, had to be kept open and maintained by, I know, plumbers, much to the despair of a few physicians who witnessed over-prescription by their own colleagues. As Dr. Bustos writes, quote, as soon as a patient meets a doctor on the street, and as soon as he has opened his mouth to tell him about his illness, the doctor prescribes bloodletting. And this infernal abuse has come to such that has turned into a vice like tobacco and chocolate. And all ladies feel that they lose their qualities unless they draw blood every spring, unquote. Fountains, doctors claim, should be in meadows and parks, not in people's arms and legs. In early modern Spain, phlebotomists were not shady vampiric characters, but part of the standard of health of those who could afford them, indicators of a prominent social position. Astrology played no part in the instruction of phlebotomic barbers, the mandatory textbook to pass the exam, as this had turned into a mechanical procedure. Astrological texts also included tables which indicated the most suitable time for baths, but it had become customary for some physicians to advertise spas. Dr. Tomás Ferrer was very interested to promote his hometown water spring and recommended drinking and bathing in it at any given time for healthy people, for sick people, unlimited baths, the more, the better. Elective and critical days became the center of a bitter debate as they marked the turning point in acute illnesses and fevers, and dictated the administration of remedies. Setenaries, quartans, and tertians were survivors of the ancient medical accounting, which allowed for a reliable prognosis. One physician, Juan de Barrios, is particularly angry at these and other matters. Doctors would, in general, just ignore astrology altogether, but Barrios is belligerent in several ways. Please note that his book was not the work of a doctor against astrologers. It is entitled True Medicine, Surgery, and Astrology, and intended just to correct the distribution of knowledge. Barrios faced learned astrologers for having spread false medical information and Barrios' view, no astrological table could be useful for medical purposes. Comets could not prognosticate the death of kings, as they offer very vague information. The numbers indicating the length of acute illnesses had no meaning in themselves unless accompanied by medical expertise. Life and death could not be consulted in charts, and Barrios was yet to know of any group of people that was homicidal, just by being a group of homicidal people, or a place where all men, absolutely all men, were chronically ill. He also condemned simplified knowledge and was especially angry at astrologers who went around posing as doctors. And I quote, "They present themselves at homes without having been called. And to credit themselves, they say, I will not cure you as a doctor, thus confessing their ignorance, but as an astrologer. Moreover, they claim to know how to raise figures for newborns and illnesses. I witnessed such drawings, and that they told three patients to stand up because they were healthy, and all three died the very same day." Unquote. In Barrios' view, the medical information contained in astrological tractates was dated and had been degraded in favor of the more advanced mathematical portion, which was actually developed. Physicians knew that the body holds patterns and is self-regulating to an extent, but also presents very problematic disorders. Harmonious views such as Pérez de Vargas were perceived by doctors as utopian. In their consultation, doctors would not use figures and numerology to calculate the time of death or prognosticate the end of an illness. Any such documents which would guarantee investigation by authorities under the accusation of astrology or sorcery to foresee. Sanctioning these methods on the grounds of faith and superstition. Inquisitorial judges were highly suspicious of diagrams found in notebooks. Physicians, on the other hand, were more commonly processed under penal law, being accused of malpractice, just killing somebody. In early modern Spain, the disdain against medical information printed in astrology books is evident and was rejected as a corporate intromission. Once medicine became a safe haven for divinatory inquiry, astrologers lost ground to physicians and were finally disjoined from medical practice. One by one, all pieces of medical information customarily included in astrological works were disbanded. Lunacy, Saturnism, and plagues did not come from the heavens. Phlebotomy and bathing tables were not only useless, but prejudicial. Critical and elective days were not signaled by planets, but by the body itself. And futuroscopic methods were to be found much closer, in terrestrial nature, but mostly inside the brain, in the shape of dreams or accounts by imbeciles. Simplified lunaries were as guilty as technical works. Villanova, Yule, and Manfredi were no longer the epitome of knowledge and vanished as models for the new generations. Doctors no longer recognized themselves in these figures, and so thereafter, astrological methods began to appear in books of common medical errors. The astrologer doctor had perished many times before. His multidisciplinary nature had allowed him to mimetize as magician, horoscope, mathematician, and doctor, resurfacing through the centuries in different shapes, sometimes to be expelled from republics and courts, and other times to be adored as demigod. Cicero unsuccessfully spoke against him. Petrus Alphonsus failed in replacing him with the necromancer. In the end, it was doctors like Juan de Barrios who officially cut the ties, put the last nail in the coffin, and won their privileged space, once reserved only to those looking above. The astrologer doctor died for the last time. and was discarded as an obsolete professional unfit to heal or prognosticate by disease, on disease. By mid-17th century, the Alcocoden and Ileg were exotic references and not providers of years within a long-standing tradition of foreseeing the time of death. In 18th century, the futuroscopic methods astrology originally provided were in the hands of physicians. When the intellectual Benito Jerónimo Feijóo wrote his text on divinatory arts, he referred only to two surviving methods, chiromancy and astrology. The astrologer had become synonym with scammer and was an extinct species, scientifically replaced by the astronomer and the mathematician. But at this point, doctors were already free from the discussion, and as they had long abandoned the skies and wondered about the paths of physical observation of cataleptics, apoplectics, and comatose, thrilled by the many possibilities of alienated.